The hour of 10:15 having arrived, I will call the House Tax Committee to order when we have a quorum. But we are going to start hearing bills right now. And members, I have a bill up in GovOps, and so we'll get this going, and then Chair Marquardt will assume the gavel until my return. So with that, I will move. In fact, I probably won't be here when this one's done. So Representative Marquardt moves House File 1535. So members, we can please take out 1535. I do not see any amendments. Any amendments? Representative Fabian. Okay, Representative Fabian, if you could welcome to the committee, if you could please present your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1535 is a bill that's been around for a couple of years now. As people know, I've been active in the in trying to create more housing, particularly workforce housing. And what we're doing with House File 1535 is trying to capture the growth in the deed and registry tax and using those dollars to create home ownership around the state of Minnesota. The program was started a couple of years ago, and we'd just like to expand on that and see if we can't keep some of these things going in some targeted areas around the state. Minnesota Housing Finance Authority is the agency that's charged with running the program through their challenge program. I've had conversations with Commissioner Tingerthal and her staff. In the bill, we've expanded what we were doing before to be able to make loans and not just grants to cities and tribal governments. And if you take a look on page 2 of the bill, you can see that on lines in subdivision 7, we're talking about workforce and affordable home ownership development account. We had to create this when we first put the bill together. We didn't have all the terminology just right. Staff caught some of the changes that needed to be made, so we did an amendment in a previous stop, and we've got the bill in the shape that we think it's a good bill. And we realize, too, that, of course, that the ask in here is probably a little steep, but, you know, we're just trying to continue the conversation, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Fabian. Do you have some
witnesses? We do.
Yep. If they could come. If you would come down forward.
And they'll do it quickly, I'm sure.
Sounds good. If you would please introduce yourself for the committee. Please proceed.
Good morning. My name is Leah Hall. I'm a resident of the small town of Millville in Wabasha County and the Community Development Director of Three Rivers Community Action that develops housing and provides services in the southeast region of the state. That includes the communities of Goodhue, Rice, Wabasha, Olmsted counties, as well as neighboring counties of Maurer, Steele, Winona, and others. I want to thank Chair Davids and Representative Fabian and committee members for the opportunity to speak with you today about House File 1535. As a community action agency, we have the privilege of working with our clients and the communities we serve to design programs and projects that are aimed at eliminating poverty and ensuring that everyone has the opportunity to overcome social and economic challenges and thrive. We believe that access to safe and affordable housing is an essential foundation for all individuals and families. Three Rivers has a comprehensive housing department that provides services across the continuum of housing, such as homelessness and rehousing services, financial coaching, home buyer education, down payment assistance, housing development, and more. Through our work in housing across southeast Minnesota, we see a growing need for safe, decent, affordable single-family homes. Our Achieve Homeownership program that identifies and addresses barriers to homeownership faced by diverse households has served over 4,000 individuals and families since 2008. Last year alone, we served 225 households through education and counseling services. Over 80% of our clients are households of color. A majority of these households are immigrant families that are new to the United States. For many of our clients, finding decent, affordable homes for sale that are under $200,000 in towns like Faribault, Northfield, Red Wing, and others is nearly impossible. This means that many service industry workers, educators, food production workers, and line workers in manufacturing, for example, do not earn enough money to purchase a home on the market. even with limited down payment assistance. An aging housing stock and lack of affordable homes with 3-plus bedrooms for families further compounds this challenge for these modest income workers. The Workforce Homeownership Fund offers community-based organizations like Three Rivers and local communities the ability to create single-family housing opportunities for workers that truly are the backbone of rural Minnesota. As a developer of affordable housing, we piece together multiple sources of funding, both public and private, and state resources that are critical to making projects work. We know that Minnesota Housing receives 3 times as many requests for homeownership funding support than they have available. And this new source would enable developers like us statewide to meet local needs of affordable homeownership for the workforce. Local homeownership solutions also help agencies like ours close the homeownership gap for households of color and help school districts retain families that are forced to move elsewhere in search of affordable homes. Homeownership also provides healthier outcomes for children and families while encouraging the continued growth of the workforce in communities throughout rural Minnesota. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today and for your consideration of the Workforce Homeownership Minnesota Bill, HF 1535. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. Any member questions for Ms. Hall? Representative Schultz?
I don't have a question, but Mr. Chair, I just want to thank Representative Fabian for carrying this bill. These funds are critical for my community of Duluth, Minnesota, and I hope that we can appropriate sufficient funds to meet the needs and the growing list of people who would like to access those funds. So thanks for bringing it forward.
Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will say that, and thank you, Representative Schultz, for that. The fund was started in 2016 with $750,000, and when that became available, there were 23 different organizations that applied for grants, and those grant requests totaled over $6 million. So there is a significant need out there, as expressed by the people that applied for these. Thank you.
Thank you. And before we move on, we do now have a quorum, so we'll call the Taxes Committee to order. And Representative Schultz is just leaving with...
Now we don't have a quorum.
Representative Schultz, would you approve the minutes?
I'll move the minutes.
We've got move the minutes. Yes, we've got move on the move minutes. Second. Everyone need a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are approved. All right. And I will move the bill 1535.
Thank you.
All right. So, Mr. Washburn, if you want to introduce yourself, and please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Jeff Washburn. I serve as the Executive Director of the City of Lakes Community Land Trust. Our organization and another 9 community land trusts across the state have created and preserved the affordability of over 1,200 community land trust homes, and we've facilitated close to 500 resales without having to reinvest funds to keep those homes affordable. We are a member of the Workforce Homeownership Minnesota Coalition, which is represented by affordable homeownership providers across the state, including community land trusts, Habitat for Humanities, Manufactured Housing, CAP agencies, and several other non-profit housing developers. Our coalition is looking to at least double the number of affordable homeownership opportunities in the state by capturing the growth in mortgage registry and deed taxes over the next 10 years to fund a dedicated source of affordable homeownership here in the state of Minnesota. Again, this request is only capturing the year-to-year growth, not requesting to increase percentages or fees, ensuring that it supports affordable homeownership here in the state of Minnesota. There is a distinct nexus as property values increase across the state. This is a way to ensure some of the benefit goes to those in our community who want to improve the housing situation for themselves and their families. We're also proposing that this fund would equally benefit both greater Minnesota as well as the metro area in these funds. Myself and several colleagues of our coalition are here today to further share what monumental opportunity this is to create and maintain affordable home ownership. Our organizations collectively serve community of color households at a rate 7 times greater than the rate of our local markets in each of our respective service areas. We already do this work effectively, but consistently are unable to serve all the households looking to our organizations to better their lives and their situations because we're needing to leverage local funds with state funds and vice versa The more money that we're able to assist households, I think the greater we're going to be able to assist the folks in our community. Thank you again for this opportunity. We need even greater investment of funding to increase affordable home ownership in the state. This fund would allow us to do that.
Thank you very much. Any members' questions? Thank you very much. Is there anyone from the audience who would like to testify for or has concerns with this bill, House File 1535? Seeing none, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fabian and I had a brief chance to talk yesterday, and we know there's a housing crisis all throughout the state in terms of affordability and people who are just really struggling for the basics of life, and the organizations that have been supported through these kind of programs have done a lot of really good work, and yet, as I understand it, this program, as it's currently structured, would go up to 115% of the poverty level, even though the greatest need is for people at much lower income levels. And so if we're going to get a new revenue that's dedicated, which we know is like almost impossible to get through this legislative process, this bill I think has been around since Representative Clark proposed it many, many years ago, I think we really need to look at whether or not we have a balanced dedication of the receipts of this, because some of you know Minnesota is under a federal court order right now because we are violating the U.S. constitutional rights of people with disabilities because we disproportionately are forcing them into group homes, assisted living, even nursing homes because there isn't affordable, accessible housing available to them. And that has been determined by the courts to be a right to them. And I've been talking, and ARC and others have been actually getting people into home ownership, some of it through the land trust and co-op kind of efforts. But I would respectfully ask as we continue this and move forward that we really look at whether or not we should have some specific goals to achieve if we were going to have a dedicated revenue source and target at least some of the money to those critical needs because, like I say, we're under federal court order and all of us could end up disabled this evening. I hope none of us in this room do. But it just takes a car accident or a disabling diagnosis like MS, and most of the housing stock in our rural areas as well as in the neighborhoods I represent are not easily convertible to accessibility. They have second floor bathrooms and bedrooms and narrow hallways, and so new construction is actually the only answer. If you don't have that, you end up in an assisted living with people 50 years older than you. It's not an ideal situation, and so I would respectfully ask the committee to think about that, and I welcome your input and ideas.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cummings, any comments from the department at this time?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for Representative Fabian, the author of the bill?
Chair, the Governor did put together a nice summary of the bill. If you've got that in your packet, it does a good job of explaining the revenue and the mortgage and the registry tax and so forth. $245 million there, and we're trying to capture some of the growth, and that would be used as the base, and it changes. The base is the previous year all the time. If somebody in one of the earlier testimonies that we had, they thought that the 245 or the current for fiscal year 17 was going to be the automatic base, and that's not true. So with that, that's my comments. Thank you, and I appreciate your indulgence.
Thank you very much. I will renew the motion for House File 1535 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Thank you very much,
Chair. And members.
Next bill, Representative Pugh is here, House File 3584. Representative Hertoff, would you mind moving House File 3584? Thank you very much, Representative Pugh. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the Tax Committee. I appreciate your hearing House File 3584. My bill seeks to resolve a simple and specific case of unequal tax treatment. private ice arenas in Minnesota are exempt from real estate taxes under Minnesota Statute Section 272.02 if they're owned by a 501c3 organization and serve primarily youth and high school sports programs. As members may know, the Department of Revenue changed its interpretation of exempt status in 2006, and ice arenas that met the test of the real estate tax exemption and applied for a sales tax exemption were denied. Previously, an exemption was granted. Members, the Duluth Heritage Center, and I noticed that Representative Schultz must have had to step out to another hearing, but was involved in this to some degree. The Duluth Heritage Center opened in 2008. Thaler Ice Arena opened in Mound, one of 10 cities that I proudly represent, in 2005. Both are owned by 501c3 organizations, and both serve primarily youth and high school programs. Both are exempt from real estate taxes, and both were denied sales tax exemptions. Subsequently, the Duluth Heritage Center went to the legislature in 2017 and gained a sales tax exemption by amendment to Section 297A. .70, creating a sales tax exemption for ice arenas that meet the requirements of the real estate tax exemption statute for the Duluth Heritage Center. So I'm here today, Mr. Chair and members, to point out that it's unfair that the Duluth Heritage Center is exempt from sales tax, and that Thaler Ice Arena in Mound, which is owned by the West Tonka Sports Association, is not. So members, my bill simply asks for the committee's consideration that the Thaler Ice Arena is afforded the same opportunity as was the Duluth Heritage Center, which was granted the same tax exemption for exactly the same situation, and that the Thaler Ice Arena be given the same consideration in this year's tax bill as it was in 2017. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I'm just curious, are they the only two then that would fall into that category, or are there others that would generally fit that definition of being a private nonprofit ownership of an ice arena?
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, I believe that this is the last one left that fits in this criteria. I do have two members of the board with me. Not certain if either one of them here. My phone, a friend who provided me with all of the content for this, is out of cell phone range. But I do believe that I am correct in stating that.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I'm all for providing facilities, and I know the cost of ice time and so on, so if you could reduce the cost, that's a good thing. I was just wondering if, being that we're specifically mentioning two, if there might be others out there in the state of Minnesota that would fit that general criteria, and I just don't know the answer to that, and maybe somebody can find out. We should be fair to all if there are others out there, is my point.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, I would be delighted to follow up on that. I do believe that I've offered the correct answer, but I would be happy to follow up on that for you.
That would be fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Metza, did you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just know that specifically two, White Lakes and Babbitt, are in a position where they're looking to keep their arenas and ice working with the transitions.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Hugh, do you have any testifiers that you had planned to hear?
I don't have any planned testifiers. I have two members of the West Tonka Sports Association here. Should they be able to answer a question?
Very good. So is there anyone from the audience that would like to speak in favor of the bill or have concerns with the bill? Mr. Cummings?
Not at this time.
And the department does not have any comments at this time. Any other members' questions? Representative Pugh, any? Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I was in late. That's why I'm catching up to speed. Representative Pugh, I just would like you to consider, maybe before this hits the floor, if community-owned or run could be included as well as nonprofit.
Any further comments, Representative Pugh?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Metza, and I will definitely take a look at that and after I speak with my source.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you'd have a lot more support in the Senate from our very own David Thomasoni, Olympian hockey player, if it affected that. So.
Well, thank you very much. I just want to make one other final remark, and that we did also receive a revenue note, and I did have an opportunity to confirm that was in line with what the West Tonka Sports Association was anticipating. So no surprises there.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to apologize, Representative Pugh. We did not realize there was another arena. We would have collaborated and included you in the original bill, so I'm sorry that we did not do that.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Schultz, no apology necessary. This was just brought to my attention, and I was surprised to see that there was this opportunity, that there was an exemption granted, and it just seemed like a natural opportunity to make things right.
Very good. Representative Hertzfoss renews his motion on House File 3584 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. And I see that the Chair Davids is here. So, Representative Carlson, would you please quickly drag out that double secret omnibus tax bill we were going to bring forward?
Yes,
so,
you want the governor's version?
I'm
cutting
that
too.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Loon, you have a bill up now, 3793. And, Representative Loon, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would. I would move, I'm not sure what the motion is, I assume we're laying this up. So, I would move House File 3793.
House File 3793, move for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Representative Loon? Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Excuse me, I've got a little frog in my throat this morning. I am very pleased to be offering a bipartisan bill, and I want to especially thank Representative Applebaum, who's a member of this committee, and Representative Pryor and Rosenthal have also joined me in this. This is a bill providing a sales tax exemption for the construction of a new fire station and then remodeling and expanding an existing fire station to become the city's police station in Minnetonka. And I know we've done this for other cities before, and I will allow my expert testifiers to talk to you more about the project. I'm very pleased to have the assistant city manager of Minnetonka, Perry Vetter, and John Vance, the fire chief of Minnetonka, to talk to you all about this project.
Very good. And who would like to go first? Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Perry Vetter. I'm the assistant city manager for the city of Minnetonka. To my right is Fire Chief John Vance. I'd also like to recognize Mayor Brad Learsome, who's in attendance, our City Manager Gerald Baroni.
Welcome, Mayor.
And Captain Andrew Gardner from our Police Department. We'd like to thank the committee, Representative Davids, for hearing this bill. And we'd like to thank Representative Loon for offering it, Representative Applebaum, Pryor, and Rosenthal for also supporting this. The City of Minnetonka has done a lot of planning on our remodel of our existing police and fire station, the building of a new fire station, all on our City Hall campus. It will be about a $25 million project. We anticipate starting construction in 2019, becoming fully operational close to the end of 2020. The sales tax exemption that we are asking for is on the construction-related materials, similar to what we could do if we were able to purchase the materials ourselves. Obviously, we would like this legislation to be into effect so we can include it into our bid documents to make the project seamless with the recommended contractor as we get close to construction. The city of Minnetonka, is on the western edge of Minneapolis and Hennepin County. We're about the 17th largest city in the state. We are very self-reliant on our property taxes. We receive no local government aid, and in fact, we are the number four payer in fiscal disparities. So we like to be a regional player. Our operations between police and fire have a lot of joint powers agreements. We work very collaboratively with our surrounding cities. To update and modernize our facilities is very important to us, not just from an operations standpoint. Seconds matter when it comes to police and fire, but also for the health and benefit of our employees as well. So Chief Vance is here to answer any questions as well. Chair, members of the committee, would like to thank you again for having us today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bevin. Chief Vance, did you want to say a few words?
Mr. Chair, members,
please state your name.
John Vance, Minnetonka Fire Department Fire Chief. We'd like to thank you again for considering this. Our fire facility was built in 1974, occupied in 1975. They had a lot of foresight back then to build in some extra space. It's a very strong structure. The structure will be reused as a part of the police department with this project. But there's many problems that come from a fire station built in the 70s. I know a lot of you have been hearing about the health risks that firefighters face and the cross-contamination that happens with the products of combustion and diesel exhaust fumes and what have you. So this facility takes all of that into consideration, allows for decontamination areas, and also separates the firefighters from being exposed to those products of combustion. Currently they are, because their work area is also the fire station bay. So it would make a huge difference to the health and safety of our firefighters, and also allow us to expediently serve the community.
Thank you. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, do you know Chief Lewis up in Virginia?
No, I do not.
Chief Vance.
Representative
Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going through a similar restructure. Our building is much, much older than that, actually, and when you drive the rigs in, the foundation actually goes up and down. So I was just wondering if this would be something they're looking at, trying to do a regional training center and moving the campus. If you could reach out to Chief Lewis and see if we could structure the bill in a way that they might be able to take advantage. We're very property tax poor district, and would love to save wherever we could to make sure that the burden was lesser on the community, at the same time making sure that the services were A+, which I commend you for. Seconds do matter, and just would appreciate if you could reach out to him.
Certainly will.
Thank you.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think if we're going to do this kind of thing, we should really look at broadly, because I think all of our fire stations and first responders are often throughout the state housed in really old buildings. The one in my area, I think one of them is over 100 years old, and they just went through a massive remodeling because the doors, I think it's over 100 years old, the doors could not really accommodate the new size of the big rigs that they have. They had like 2 inches of clearance, which really kind of put the building and the equipment at risk. And so, you know, I do think we all value these sort of things, but I think it would be really wise for us to think about a broader effort, or else we're going to end up with, you know, 200 additional bills from the 855 cities who all are trying to upgrade to modern safety standards, because we all want to make sure that our first responders are in modern facilities that meet their needs, that help them decontaminate their equipment safely, that meet the public's needs. And so rather than just doing one by one, I think we should think about whether a broad approach might be a good approach, and maybe the Department of Revenue could give us an idea.
Mr. Vedder?
Yeah. Chair, members of the committee, the League of Minnesota Cities actually does have a legislative white paper on sales tax exemptions that they are pushing and have pushed. I know the revenue note has a little bit more particulars in that about making construction costs exempt from sales tax on a broad basis.
Representative Loeffler?
Thank you. No, that's, I just wanted to follow.
Representative Alpapon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Veteran Chief Vance. Just want to thank you guys for coming out here. You have done a wonderful job for the city of Minnetonka. I want to thank the author, Representative Ling, for putting forth this bill. And just in response to Representative Loeffler's concern, you know, I think a need basis is probably the way to go, and I think we should commend the city of Minnetonka for coming here, demonstrating that they need and upgrading facilities and putting forth a very reasonable ask that is based on facts, and maybe not every city or municipality or fire station, police station needs upgrades immediately. So I think it's important to address the ones that have demonstrated to need improvements. You've done a wonderful job. It's a good bill. I'm proud to support it. So thank you very much, and congrats to our new mayor, Brad Wiersen, on his recent election. Thank you.
Any other member questions of testifiers or Representative Loon? If not, anyone from the audience that would care to testify on House File 3793, either for or that might have concerns on the bill? Seeing none, Mr. Cummings. Thank you very much. Chair Loon, would you like to close things up?
Yes. Thank you, members, and thank you very much to the testifiers. I think they presented a clear picture of the proposal. And again, I understand Representative Loeffler's concerns in that, and I actually do think it would be a good idea if down the road we could look at providing this exemption for all cities. I think having to pay sales taxes on construction for your police and fire facilities, in my mind, doesn't seem like the right policy for the state. But be that as it may, it's a policy we have now, and I would appreciate the committee's consideration for this project.
Thank you very much. Chair Loon renews her motion on House File 3793 to lay it over for possible inclusion in the taxes on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Chair Davids, House File 3494. Chair Davids, would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, I'll move House File 3494. Members, this is a bill regarding insurance, life insurance, some changes here. Maybe if Mr. Michael could describe, and I have one witness to also make some comments.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House File 3494 modifies the 2017 changes that essentially removed the corporate franchise tax exemption for certain kinds of captive insurance companies and attempts to redefine the kinds of captive insurance companies in a more functional way. I think it might be useful just as a background for the bill to describe the rationale for the 17 changes and then what Representative David's bill does. Insurance companies in general are exempt from the corporate franchise tax, and that exemption derives from the fact that they instead pay the premiums tax, which is essentially like a gross receipts tax rather than a profits tax, which is what the corporate franchise tax is. What that allows is for unitary businesses that are engaged in business functions other than insurance to have captive insurance companies that provide insurance to the rest of that business. But if they can, either through the pricing of that insurance or by the locating of assets in that captive insurance company, they can essentially transfer profits from the regular business to the insurance company and avoid taxation. So the governor's bill in 2017 recommended that in those instances that the profits from those captive insurance companies be included and subject to the corporate franchise tax, because the rationale that they were instead paying the premiums tax really didn't exist. The way captive insurance companies was defined, though, was based on simply their licensure. Were they licensed in Minnesota? If they were licensed in Minnesota, then they were treated as a non-captive insurance company. And if they were licensed in a state that retaliated against Minnesota, then they were also not treated as a captive insurance company that was subject to this rule. So basically what that meant is that any insurance company that was licensed in a state that either didn't have retaliatory taxation or that had a reciprocal non-retaliation arrangement with Minnesota was potentially a captive insurance company. What Representative David's bill does is to try to functionally define what a captive insurance company is that would be subject to these rules, and it does that with a two-pronged test. The first prong of this test can be met, and each of these prongs, to make it more complicated, can be met in two different ways. So basically we've got a two-prong, or a sort of a four-part test. The first prong is looking at what the functions are of the insurance company, and you can satisfy that prong by actually being licensed as a captive insurance company. There are a number of states, for Vermont being the most common one, that has a separate law that says you can become licensed as a captive insurance company. So you can meet that test that way. The business has decided to actually designate this company as a captive insurance company. The other way you can meet the test is if more than half of your business is providing insurance to other corporations in the unitary group. So that's the first prong. And you have to meet both prongs to be a disqualified insurance company that's subject to the corporate franchise tax. The second prong attempts to get at the reason for disqualifying captive insurance companies, which is profits are being shifted from the regular business into the captive insurance company. And you can meet that test if half of the gross receipts of this entity are not from insurance. So the most common, one of the common ways that you would engage in this profit shifting is by what's called stuffing the captive, where you put a lot of your investment assets in the captive, and so the earnings on those investment assets are then become exempt from the corporate franchise tax. So this test says, gee, if more than half of your gross receipts are from things like investment income, then you satisfy that prong and then become a disqualified captive. The second way you can satisfy that prong is, again, remember that the reason for the corporate franchise exemption is because the insurance company is paying premiums tax instead, or some states impose other forms of tax. So the second way you can satisfy prong number two is to say that if your effective tax rate on your premiums is very low, just a quarter of a percent, Minnesota's premium tax is a 2% rate. On most things, it's 1.5% on life insurance. So if you pay a very low effective rate, then you can satisfy that prong. And so keep in mind, you have to satisfy both of these two prongs to become a disqualified captive and lose your corporate franchise tax exemption. So that's basically what the chairman's bill does.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chair David?
I also have a witness, Representative Mipsy, Robin Rowan, if she could make a few comments, please.
You bet. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robin Rowan. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council. I'm also here on behalf of the property casualty industry as well. Last year's bill contained language, as Joe Michael explained very thoroughly and well, language preventing captive insurers from sheltering income from a corporate franchise tax. And while we support revenue's goal, our concern is that the last year's language failed to adequately distinguish between commercial insurance companies and captives, and it also failed to distinguish between legitimate captives and what I call naughty captives. And the problem is that then you can pull in legitimate captives, which serve a purpose. They can either reinsure an affiliate group's employee benefits, or they can be used as a more cost-effective way to manage the risk of an affiliate group. So they have very legitimate purposes. And we're concerned that the language in last year's bill can pull these legitimate entities into the unitary group and require them to pay the franchise tax. So the test that Joe Michael described, one is derived from New York, the other is derived from Joe Michael's brain. We feel that they draw those clear lines, which are very important to us. And we've met with revenue a couple times. We're meeting again today. I don't think they think we're quite there yet, but we're on the right track. we just want to make sure that the language ends up meeting our shared goal with revenue, which is to prevent naughty captives from sheltering income and let legitimate insurance companies and captives do what they do and pay the premium tax. Thank you very much. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Before we go on, the tax committee would like to welcome 12th grade students from St. Peter High School. If you would please stand. I saw a number of them come in, and they are participating in the Capitol's historic site, Voice of the People, Your Role in Minnesota Government. And they're touring and part of an educational program. So on behalf of the committee, thank you for taking part in our government. Representative Hurtoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just we should all recognize the future taxpayers in this room.
So students, pay attention to what's happening here. So,
Mr. Chairman, some of them may be already if they're high school students and working.
So any questions from members? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, I was going through the, and I'm not sure if there's an answer here, I was going through the analysis as well as the Department of Revenue guesstimate in regards to this, and I was trying to see if anybody knows the potential number of companies that may be able to reclassify. Do we know that number, or is we just kind of a guess?
Ms. Rowan, any?
I don't.
Anyone? I think we'll have to come back on that.
It's just my curiosity. I was just curious how many we were actually talking about. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions from members? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and it always catches my eye when we make tax policy that's retroactive, and this is for taxes beginning after December 31st, 2016, and it seems like because of that, we should be able to, through the Department of Revenue, get a better sense of how many companies have filed under one way or another, or that as they file their 17 taxes now, we might be able to get a better sense. But I wonder if there's any sense of how many even have raised this as an issue, or is this just sort of theoretical, looking at the language?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, this is more of an enforcement issue than a filing issue. A captive that's illegally sheltering income isn't going to refile because of this. The language from last year's bill is, from our perspective, so unclear. We don't know exactly who it would pull in. We do know if the department chose to enforce it this way, and we share the same purpose of not wanting to go after legitimate insurance companies and wanting to go after naughty captives. If you read the language literally from last year, it could actually pull in New York Life, which is a $1 billion, very legitimate commercial insurance company. So it's more of an enforcement issue than who's filing what type under what type of tax.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm continuing to learn.
Before I call the department down, I'm going to ask, is there anyone from the audience that would like to testify for or have concerns on this bill? All right.
Mr. Chair, while the department's coming down,
Davids.
I believe it's the St. Peter Saints. No?
Yes.
I'm just guessing.
Nodding their head, yes.
St. Peter Saints. Okay, good.
Chair Davids is, I think, knows all the school's mascot names.
Getting there, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Mr. Cummings.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I do have to say, Mr. Chair, you look very good in that chair. So,
well, Mr. Chair, not that good. I mean, very good, but
Mr. Cummings, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, insurance companies are generally exempt from the Minnesota corporate franchise income tax, and are instead subject to a gross premium tax on premiums they receive. Some unitary businesses divert income to a member which may qualify as an insurance company and thereby were exempt from the corporate franchise tax on that income. House File 3494 amends language that was added as a result of the 2017 legislative session. Last year, this provision was added in order to end abusive practices of companies which engage in some insurance activity but also shelter other streams of income that greatly exceed the income from insurance activity. The current statutory language more clearly defines, for the purposes of the unitary business principle, what constitutes an income tax-exempt insurance company. The insurance company wants to, the insurance community wants to ensure that the language and statute related to practices by certain captive insurance companies is limited to those engaged in tax avoidance behavior. This bill limits the application of the corporate franchise tax to certain captive insurance companies that are engaged in abusive tax avoidance strategies. The bill removes the newly added definition of what qualifies an insurance company and creates a new definition of disqualified captive insurance company, which is subject to income taxation. I think the Department of Revenue wants to continue to work with you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Rowan, and others to ensure the language works well and is clear, and we're going to try and find some peace in the valley. If this bill moves through the process, the Department of Revenue looks forward to working with this committee and staff. I think that there is a general recognition that we share the same goal with the chair and the insurance companies, and I think we're going to find a way to get to a place in which we all can have some clarity about what the statute is trying to do.
Thank you. Representative
McDonald. Yeah, Mr. Chair. See, I'm still trying to find out what a naughty captive is, and Google's not really helping. I don't think I can share.
I'm going to defer
to Mr. Michael, what naughty captive is that? Cummings, no? Or,
it's not a department.
I can answer that, Mr. Chairman.
Chair Davids.
It's the kind of companies we're trying to go after, what we tried to do last year, and what this cleans up, because a New York Life, a State Farm Life, a United Life, whoever, are doing it right. We have found that some of the companies are playing games with creating insurance companies, moving assets over, and we want to stop that. That's what we're going after. And whether we have this, I think Ms. Rowan was very good in describing what a total and complete abysmal failure my 2017 bill was. She was, that hurt, by the way.
Yes.
So with that being said, that's what we're trying to do here, and we will continue to work with the department because Commissioner Bowerly and myself, Mr. Cummings, have been working on this quite a while, and when it came to my attention last year that some of these things were going on, I mean, I'm in the insurance industry, but I've got no time for some of these abusive practices, and they are naughty. I think that's a very nice word to use compared to words I've used, which we cannot bring here because the St. Peter Saints are saints, and we don't want to say those types of things. So with that, if there's other questions, we'll certainly entertain other questions.
There we go. Any other questions for Chair Davids? Representative Dreskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hurtas raised a good point as I was talking to him. What will this mean for our surrounding states and or other states generally? You know, when we provide taxation policy, people generally are more creative than the efforts of lawmakers and government to enforce the laws they make. Maybe Mr. Michael knows, but what are other states doing? Are other states have less defined laws in this area that potentially our companies could migrate to and away from us if we do this? That would be a question and or concern.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dreskowski, couple observations about this. This has been a recognized sort of national problem that the Multi-State Tax Commission has been working on for years as a way to try to address. So it's on the radar of other states that, like, not all states are like Minnesota in exempting insurance companies from their corporate franchise tax. Minnesota, as recently as about 20 years ago, actually imposed its corporate franchise tax, but allowed a premium tax credit against the corporate franchise tax, which essentially exempted most insurance companies from paying that tax other than some life companies. So this is a national problem. A unitary business cannot avoid this by sort of locating their insurance company elsewhere. In fact, these companies are almost all, yeah, they are, because Minnesota doesn't license captives. They're going to be actually domiciled in other states. Vermont's the state that most of them use are foreign countries. And the reason why it doesn't allow them to, you can't sort of change your location to avoid the tax, is because our tax is based on your Minnesota sales. So the only way you can really avoid corporate franchise taxation is by having no nexus in Minnesota, which is not easy to do because it's economic presence nexus. It's like you have to give up selling to Minnesota buyers, which most corporations aren't willing to do that to avoid, you know, paying a fraction of their profits back to the state.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Hey, Representative McDonald. I just want to point out to the students of St. Peter's that Mr. Michael, our House Research Analyst, is one of the most brightest persons in the room, has more of capacity, knows about law and tax law and capacity and implications of the state of Minnesota than we'll ever have one in this state. So you're looking at one, just want to compliment and brag about our great Mr. Michael, because he is quite a genius in that tax capacity.
Well deserved. Thank you, Representative McDonald.
And humble, too. Well deserving.
Well deserved. Chair Davids, I don't see any other comments. Would you like to give your
closing
comments?
Well, thank you, Chair, members. I hope we can lay this over for possible inclusion on this tax bill.
Very good. Chair Davids renews his motion on House File 3494 to lay it over for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Chair Davids, any announcements you would like to make?
Well, I'd just like to thank you, Chair Marquardt, for having the gavel today, and look for your emails for the meetings on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of next week. And like I say, good government all the time.
Thank you, and Chair Davids, thank you for giving me this opportunity. I really do appreciate that. Thank you so much. And with that, the Tax Committee is adjourned.